Good afternoon, good morning for the ones that are in the US, and welcome everybody to our first data-driven summit. My name is Jesus Herrero, and I'm one of JAMP co-founders. I'm based in Madrid now at the office, and I will be moderating this panel, and be trying to launch some questions to the audience. We have, thank you very much for joining us, and please let me introduce our speakers today. First of all, Ryan, please can introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Ryan Schnatry. I'm the general manager of Topic, which is a streaming service that launched in the US and Canada in November. So I'm very excited here to be here with my fellow panelists and Jesus. So thanks for having me.
Thank you, Ryan. Will.
My name is Will Rosser. I am the Senior Vice President of Distribution Marketing for Game Show Network. We are a cable network in the US, Canada, and Caribbean. And I run a lot of our digital video distribution. And I would like to compliment Ryan on his spectacular marketing with his background. I wish I had been so clever.
I like it. I like it. Mark.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckwith, and I'm the EVP of Business Development and Affairs at PureFlix. And like Will, I congratulate Ryan on the timely marketing. We're going to get flogged later for missing the opportunity, but that notwithstanding, I'll give you a little bit more detail about PureFlix later, but just in a sense, we're the leading faith and family SVOD service in North America.
Thank you, Mark. Roger.
Hi, I'm Rogier van den Brink. I'm a product owner at 24i, and 24i is a software and hardware company that is active all around the globe. And I'd say we provide video experiences from end to end. So from video encoding to the UI, and the only thing you have to bring is content. And we support VOD propositions as well as operator propositions.
Thank you, Roger.
Yeah.
So well, we have a great panel today. We have three direct-to-consumer services working in the US and Canada, and we have a technology vendor like 24i, really well-known in the industry. So the topic of today is really interesting. Basically, is how niche content providers can benefit from data-driven strategies and compete in a highly competitive market that, like everybody is aware of, and are able to maximize their ROI by using machine learning technologies. This is how we're going to try to deal. This is a topic we're going to try to deal today with the panel. So first of all, I give a little bit of background. At the end of the day, today, artificial intelligence is being used for many things. We all know that. And the interesting topic is that we are trying to understand how this applies for the video and entertainment industry. So one of the things we would like to know from the audience today is how they are using or they are planning to use more in the future these technologies to maximize their business profit at the end of the day. So I will start with PureFlix. I would like to know, I think you guys are doing things around recommendation. You are quite advanced from the conversations we have previously. So I would like to you, Mark, to tell us a little bit how PureFlix is taking advantage of these technologies to maximize your success, let's say.
Great, happy to tell you that. But first, just a minute or two about PureFlix. So we launched back in 2015, and we launched with the goal to bring faith and family-based content to anybody in the US and then expanded to Canada. We've grown our service quite nicely over the years, and we've now served over 102 million hours of content as a very, you know, we're a very small operation comparatively to, you know, the big bad boys we all know about. But just so you know, in the last in 2020, we've driven, you know, the experience has, you know, grown quite exceptionally, and we've already served in this year almost 30 million hours of content. So we've already exceeded in, you know, 9 months what it took us all last year to do via, you know, the audience, projecting 40 million hours plus of content by the end of the year, which is a growth for us of 167% over last year. So 167 20% growth in hours streamed. Now, for us as a business, we, you know, as a small provider, we differentiate ourselves around our content strategy, our marketing strategy, our analytics strategy, and things like that. We do not differentiate ourselves from, per se, from being a content platform. We utilize services from, you know, for example, from 24i and Comcast and Jump, because the technology stack is not where we select ourselves to be the innovator, as opposed to the master integrator. So we don't have a cadre of engineers like at Netflix and others that are just building stuff organically. We take the best of breed, put it together, and then use innovative strategies around content. So for us, in a faith-based market, as Jesus says, you know, it's a very different part of the marketplace to attack because of the nature of the content and our pledge to our consumers to have no faith, no violence, no language or sex surprises. So it is good, clean content. And so that means we have to watch every minute of every show and take out the offensive things that our audience might find. Again, we're not your secular service. We are entertainment and faith, not exclusively one or the other. But it's all good, clean family content. And so by doing that, we have 250 plus content providers out there. So we have a very wide catalog, but that means we need very good intelligence on how to drive this effectively. Because while we have curators to help position content, you know, with that number of titles and diversity, we need some machine learning, we need some extra help behind the scenes. And that's how we use, you know, recommendation. We're fairly young into recommendation technology, but it's how we're helping to differentiate ourselves in the marketplace by driving depth into the catalog and engagement of the views. And you can see it already with what we've driven on the number of hours. So that's just a little bit. I don't want to drop. I could talk for the whole half hour, but I'm gonna pass it over and let some other guys.
It's good as a starting point, Mark, for sure. So yeah, you brought a really good, interesting topic, which is how you can create content using AI, which we talked before, and I think it was really smart to use it in that direction in one sense. I would like to speak with Ryan a little bit, and that Ryan, please tell us a little bit about topic, your service, and how you're going to differentiate, or do you plan to differentiate from the rest. Tell us a little bit about this, and also how you can maybe use data-driven technologies to maximize your business.
Yeah, we're a little unique in that we're not, we don't focus on a genre as a niche service. So we program across multiple different types of formats, from scripted to unscripted, and we're pretty agnostic when it comes to length. So we really look to bring the best stories that we can find that haven't really gotten the platform that we feel they deserve from around the world, whether that's a, you know, 2 or 3 minute short, all the way up to, I think our longest title is almost 8 hours in a film. And, you know, we're concentrating on really uncovering filmmakers and projects and passions that the larger streaming services, you know, have overlooked or don't make sense for them. And, you know, we're not a demographically led audience. We're programming to sort of a frame of mind, a sensibility for consumers who are looking to expand their world through the intersection of sort of meaningful based programming and everything being highly entertaining. So it's been really, you know, great to launch in November, and we've been growing steadily since, which is exciting. And, you know, a lot of that comes down to similar to what Mark said, we, you know, don't have the resources to be able to compete at the platform tech or stack level like Amazon and Netflix, et cetera. So we work with 24i as well, with Jump, with our partner Kling, and, you know, look to integrate all of that. And then a lot of how we're leveraging data and analytics for us starts more upstream at the moment. You know, unfortunately, you know, you're kind of confined with who you can advertise with in the direct space, but Facebook is the, you know, primary means for us. And while there are certainly downsides to that at this current moment, there are at least a tremendous amount of technological elements that we're able to take advantage of. So we can really A/B test huge numbers of combinations of things to both understand what drives a conversion, but also what titles interest our audience base. So we leverage those learnings across our owned and operated business, but then into our channel business where we have less insight into what the consumers are doing. So if a title is doing super well in Facebook for acquisition advertising based on our testing, then we'll promote that title on our Amazon channel later. Very, very simplistic stuff, but Facebook does all of that heavy lifting that as our team, you know, we'd never be able to do. So that's the major area. We're really excited to get into recommendations, to use Jump's algorithms, to experiment there. We're not, you know, large enough yet, unfortunately. We're still growing. So we do hope to be able to leverage that more quickly into the future. So those are, you know, those are two major ways. We're sort of stuck in that position where we can take advantage of some things that are already scaled in the market, but anything that needs our user data, you know, we're still sort of working to make sure that what would be generated will be accurate and can help grow the business. So just a couple things we're working on at the moment.
Thank you, Ryan. Really interesting. What about GSN? This is a really interesting service you guys have there. So tell us a little bit about it and what are your plans in using, you know, these technologies?
Sure. So Game Show Network is what it says. We are game shows. We have a huge production schedule of our own shows. And our current app is a complimentary service to a user's cable subscription. So, you know, we went to market a few years ago with really an MVP, and we've had an MVP in market for quite a while. And our interest has been really trying to understand this audience better. You know, our audience tends to be a little bit older, and we've always been interested to understand how our audience might be different in a digital space. And our hope here is that we're going to understand a lot more about our current user base, really understand who they are, how they're consuming, when they're consuming, try to create smarter cohorts so that we can figure out how to market this app and this platform better. You know, today we're not monetizing. Our hope is, of course, to get to that place, to find some money through this app and through advertising. But, you know, we don't think we have the users today. We just launched a new app, you know, thanks to 24i. I think, like the others, we're the same position. We're not big enough to warrant having a team of engineers on standby to build a technology stack. So we are, you know, using all white label products, you know, really kind of across the board. And in this new app that we have recently launched, we have included a live stream of our cable network. And, you know, the early indications are that it's really been the thing that our app has been missing. You know, our users are spending a lot more time with us. And what we're hopefully going to start seeing now is, all right, when are they watching us? How are they watching us? What devices are they using? And is there an opportunity to go and grab some of these users that maybe are distracted by traditional primetime programming and bring them into our environment and maybe capture some of those eyeballs back? So we're pretty excited about the next level of analytics that we are receiving and the level of detail that we are getting from our previous version, which, you know, admittedly was an MVP and was not, you know, was a pretty labor-intensive analytic platform.
that everybody tries to avoid a little bit. So yeah. I see a common pattern in some of the things that you guys mentioned, which is basically, if you are not big enough, it's better to work with vendors, which I think is much smarter, because at the end of the day, if you need to invest, probably it's better to invest in marketing and content than in technology. that you can probably get in the market with really experienced companies, in this case, like 24i. So I want to give it to Roger and tell us a little bit how you're helping these three companies and many other companies in the industry go to every device, and also a little bit related to AI and machine learning, if you are planning something around that.
Yeah, well, one of the fun things is, of course, we do have those developers, but what we do, and especially if you're talking white label, I just heard a word there, you have to make sure that, that what we do applies to anyone. So, I think that data, for example, can be used to track the bottlenecks in your UX. So that's something I would really like to pick up in the future, because we're now just talking recommendations. I will get to recommendations later on. But I think that in the future, and you can already do it now, but I want something in my product, for example, that actually tracks down what users are doing, but also find bottlenecks, like, hey, when are they just leaving your platform, or why did they not reach that press play and not pushing the button there to watch a video? And I think AI can actually work there. So first you have to have the triggers, and of course then have the technology just look into why people are just leaving you. But if you want to make things more personal in terms of recommendation, you want to start combining data with other services and devices. I think there are various ways to recommend content on your video service. I think the panel people here already also addressed that. Like you have content to content, you also have recommendations specifically tailored to you. And that's mostly, I think, based on your watching behavior. And that also requires a thorough analysis of your watch behavior and metadata in order to actually determine if those recommendations work. You need to also apply a proper labeling to the recommendation and measure if users are clicking them. I also heard the A/B testing. That's, I think, a good way to see if it works. And of course, most of us know those types of recommendations. I think that besides the platforms here, a lot of people also know this from Netflix. And to give you a little insight on how difficult actually creating good recommendations is, let me give you a story, because I've had the opportunity to work for a public broadcaster, actually wanted to be like Netflix, and I want to do it all by themselves. But of course, don't always have the money to do so. And I used to have a manager, and I was an editor, and I was doing some product management stuff on the side. He said, "Oh, here, I want recommendations." I says, "Okay, but the recommendation engine costs you like $500,000. I don't have that kind of money. I will give you $0, and you just have
to do it.
Yeah, make it happen." And okay, and then it's okay. Oh, how are we going to tackle this? And then it turned out that when you have metadata and you have analytical data, you can actually combine those and come up with something that looks like a recommendation. And actually it worked pretty well. People were clicking those. And at some point, it was a few years later, the company decided to actually start building a recommendation engine. And it took data scientists and developers, that was already a complete team, 2 years to actually have better recommendations than that just simple business rule thing we did. I must say, I'm sometimes in contact with those guys. They are a way further ahead than those business rules. So they're now doing pretty well. Another thing I noticed with recommendations is that a lot of people are actually interested in what other people are watching. I think that peer recommendation is very powerful. And it could be just as simple as top lists. And I was actually shocked to see that Netflix just started using them. Just, I noticed them the first time during the COVID pandemic. Just, hey, what's this? I see top 10 in the Netherlands. Why did they just start doing this like yesterday? Why not earlier? Because when I was in the editorial team and also when I was product owner at, for example, broadcaster company, we already saw that those top lists are really powerful and you can actually use a lot of data to also target content on a country level, for example, but we also saw that people in cities are watching different content than in rural communities, even up to the level of a street. And people are actually very interested in what their neighbors are watching. So I think it's a combination of fear of missing out and curiosity that people have. I think that if you want to even take it a step further, I think you can also combine services. So you're not using just the data, but combine services. So for example, see it like this. You have a subscription. You and your wife have your own watch profile. You have connected the service to your calendar and to the weather station outside your home. Why not have a recommendation like, hey, I see it's raining outside. I have some perfect piece of content here that really suits the mood.
Yes, mood recommendations, yes.
Yeah, so based on your mood. And what you could also do is like, hey, we just detected your wife has left the building to see her friends. We also see you have that.
You cannot go too far on the recommendations. Right?
Yeah, that she doesn't like. So why not watch that horror movie tonight? Yeah. Or when your service detects like, hey, you're both at home. Why not watch a romantic movie together? I think those are possibilities that you can actually combine into creating a more personalized way of targeting your content.
Okay, I think it's clear. Because recommendation, it's I think we talked a lot about recommendations, but I would like to know a little bit also more what other techniques we can use. And I think you guys are also thinking about some of them. Maybe Mark, you can give us a little bit of view of what are you probably thinking about doing for churn, for engagement, maybe using techniques also there, analyzing behavior of users, and understand whether they're engaged or not to the service to do actions before they leave. Something related to that. What are you guys doing there?
Yeah, so a few things on that from a PureFlix perspective and some patterns we've noticed or take advantage of. Outside of just pure content recommendation, we've noticed that that the more devices a household uses, the more engaged they'll remain. So if you have folks that are only on a single device, but you're unavailable on lots of different platforms, do proactive steps to make sure they know this, because the more platforms they get onto, the simpler, you know, there's some logic there, simpler it is, blah, blah, blah. But take advantage of that, because it is an engagement strategy that leads to better, you know, more views and longer engagement. A few other things that we take advantage of heavily is and I will mention that on cohorts, but analyzing, you know, what led them in, you know, for example, PureFlix gives a 1 week free trial. We want you to explore PureFlix, enjoy it before you make the hard commit. And so for us, you know, we market titles, we position titles that we believe are very interesting from a curation perspective. But we also, look for the patterns of what led to success. What was that conversion event? What title were they last watching before they, you know, as part of their trial process or their conversion process? And then use that as, and if you can find those three or four titles that were those success metrics into it, you'll find a better conversion. Because for us as a small company, we too use very, very tactical digital methodologies to get to consumers, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, things like that. And you have to maximize your spend on those. So we know our business model is all built around that trial acquisition cost. So we have to be very efficient in how we get customers to take a trial, but that they are going to convert, you know, high propensity to convert to make the marketing spend pay off. So you need to, you know, pay attention to these patterns in the noise, so to speak, to find what's going to lead to success. Because you'll find that some titles lead to very good conversion events, but some titles, those don't necessarily lead to lifetime value. It's the strangest thing in the world that some titles get people to convert, but they'll watch other things related to the lifetime value and the engagement over the long term. Last one, we're also looking at interesting ways to tie data together to do something unique. So for example, in the faith-based space, we do a lot of editing, or we ask for a lot of edits to content. The minute we do that, the MPAA rating that came with a content title is off the table because we changed it from PG-13 to PG, right? And or to G. Well, we can't use that rating system anymore to tie to that title because it's not appropriate. So we're in this process of how do we create our own rating system and then tie that to the audience metrics and the behavioral patterns to fine tune how we can recommend content related to, you know, these disparate pieces of data that are being created by us and others. So just a few things on the PureFlix side.
Thank you, Mark. Going to topic now, because I'm also really curious to know for you guys, probably you don't have, let's say the major new releases which they do huge promotions when you have content and movies. At the end of the day, you are probably launching and you need to see the effect on the audience, which one is working better or not. So maybe some questions we're getting from other clients is if we have some kind of algorithm to predict content consumption. This is coming in some questions in our clients. Are you thinking around this topic and using this kind of algorithm for the future in your content purchasing?
Yeah, I mean, we would love to be able to implement that as soon as we can, because as a new service with titles that we're unsure of how they'll perform in our market, we kind of have to wait and see, and we don't have a great way to make the connections between the titles that are performing best for us and then what might be most likely to aid in retention from each of those individual titles. So at the moment, we're really just feeling that out. We think we know some of the patterns, and we look to present that through through our newsletter. If you watched this, you might like this. Again, like, we operate a little bit in the sort of simplistic zone at the moment, given our life stage. But I'm really excited for when we have enough data that we are able to say, at least for our top 20 or 30 titles, that we have individualized pathways. We really try to think of ourselves as not having multiple viewing patterns or cohorts in a way, because we really want everything on the service to be something that someone in our audience will take a chance on and try. So we're taking a slightly like less traditional approach in that. That doesn't mean there probably aren't particular viewing subgroups that we can use algorithms around to help, you know, deepen a connection. So in some senses, we're trying to kind of like stay in the gray here, where we don't want the machines to come in too much, because that defeats a little bit of why we started the thing to begin with. But we do know that we cannot predict everything for everyone. As Mark just said, it's very surprising sometimes what somebody will watch and then love after. You know, it's a connection that nobody on the team would have made. So the data does help us uncover those things.
That has to come with the data for sure. And question to Will, you just recently launched. Hey, what kind of KPIs, other than the obvious, probably another one that nobody can think of, are you willing to look and to find in your, let's say, early stages of launching? Can you tell us a little bit what are you expecting, or what would you expect in this sense?
Well, you know, we're seeing some confirmation of things that we knew from previous versions, but we're seeing those amplified by some of the enhancements that we have made. You know, I think what we're really interested in is retention. You know, we're trying to grow that base. Trying to retain the base of users that we have and improve on the experience that they're having so that they'll come back and they'll stay with us longer. And, you know, hopefully we'll build enough of an audience that that monetization becomes more realistic and becomes, you know, a worthwhile endeavor. I think, you know, what we are seeing is that, you know, in our very earliest stages is that, you know, we're seeing some improvements in our video delivery. You know, so our content is starting faster and it's coming in a little bit better. And that has, that's resulting in better dwell times and more time, you know, watching our content. So now the next step is going to be, all right, what is driving people into the app? And we, like I said earlier, we are kind of a large content machine. We're producing a lot of new game shows every year. We're actually about to go back into production and produce, you know, hundreds of episodes in the next few months. And, you know, so now what shows are bringing people into the app? What shows are people wanting to use? And then I think, how are we going to start manipulating what we're presenting to people based on the platform that they're on? You know, because I think what, you know, when we first started, it was all about mobile, mobile, mobile. Well, mobile is fine, but it's not really where the consumer wants to be. You know, I have a nice iPhone. I don't want to watch content on my iPhone. I want to watch it on a television. I want to watch it on my 55-inch television because it's a better experience. And I think we're seeing that. So now how do we start using, you know, these devices as steps towards the environment that the customer is most likely going to enjoy more and then stick around for more? So, you know, how do we start creating that life flow? One thing I might want to, I'd add to Roger's comments about recommendations and I think how far we go with recommendations. You know, I think we all need to be careful about that. Because I don't know about, you know, everyone here, but I think we've all been served an ad where it seems that someone was listening to us. Okay. You know, that Facebook or Instagram delivers that perfect ad 2 hours after we've had a conversation. And I think the consumer, and maybe it's just me, and maybe it's because I'm like the rest of you, you know, I'm in the technology space, but I don't like it. You know, it feels invasive. And I think we have to be smart about, you know, is there a level of recommendation that we want to go to? And I think, you know, noticing that your wife has left and now you can watch a horror movie might be a step too far. But
I agree. It was just to give an example of what you could do.
Yes, I understand. I have to say, you know, it's...
Agree.
No, but this is...
I actually switched off my Google Assistant, but...
So this is really great that you brought this topic, Will, because first of all, I agree with you, and I think they listen, and not only listen, but they watch, so both. And if you have seen one series called Startup, they stated that they do. The giants. But in any way, there's a question coming from the audience. That is, it comes exactly to this topic. Whether at some point will be kind of tricky to be partners with Facebook or with TikTok or with even Google, that they use too much information to offer advertisement. What is the threshold of you know? And for brands like yourselves, maybe at some point, of course, now everybody you guys need to gain new users, but at some point, what's your vision there? Do you think, guys, that will change? There will be a limit. How do you see the future? I think this is a good question for the three of you, and maybe we can finish with this one. Depends on the time.
Yeah, I can jump in on that because I think I triggered it. You know, no, we don't love that. In our case, we're fairly dependent on Facebook to identify and find our audience in the beginning. You know, we participated in Stop Hate for Profit in July, but it's not enough to to just take 1 month off. And so we really are striving and hoping to get to a point where we can spin up more ethical and alternative channels to finding subscribers that we think will love what we have. This is the nature of a sort of basically the duopoly or triopoly we're in with Facebook, Google, and Amazon. Where do you draw the line? Do you not post on Instagram because you don't like what Facebook is doing? Well, really, there's no difference ethically to me speaking there. Try to avoid. There was a great set of articles a couple years ago, I think from Mashable, about attempting to avoid the tentacles of Amazon, Facebook, and Google. They spent a week shutting everything off in their life that came from one of those places. Think about AWS. Are you going to protest AWS? You're basically turning yourself off from the internet in that case. Anyway, a little of a digression, but it's incredibly hard. It's incredibly complicated for a business that is trying to do good in the world to know that to get the subscribers that you need in order to further your mission is most effective and most helpful in building long-term viability comes from a platform like Facebook is really hard to reconcile. So that's not necessarily an answer, but we're certainly aware of it. We really hope that we see alternative platforms that can allow us to compete for those subscribers.
It's definitely an answer, and it's definitely, I think, that now we need them. And now, I think that's kind of the answer. We like it or not, whether we like it or not, nowadays we need them. What is your opinion, Mark?
Well, it's diversity. We've had instances in the past where the roller coaster of public opinion on things or ride the different waves, and so you ride the waves as it best fits your business and your operating principles. So from marketing and in general, you need diversity because audiences reside in different places. So whether that's Facebook, and some of these other places, you need to find where your audience is living, and if it meets the business parameters of whether it's culture or execution, you gauge those aspects and move forward according to your what's going on. So does anyone want to be 100% reliant on any single entity? Oh God, no. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't be saying it like that because I would have just gotten censored on my own site. Making a oh my God reference. No, we don't do that, right? So, but my humor just couldn't stop itself. We look, we learn, we adapt, and stay to our principles, appropriately.
Hey, Will, how about you?
Well, I think the question of consumer privacy is a really important one. We as a business, we honestly try to be pretty apolitical. We really see ourselves as a place of respite from the world and from the things that are going on in our society. And so we try not to really take a position. And I think, so I don't want to say that I think, any member of FANG is evil. I think they are all serving a purpose. And I think they're all serving, frankly, a pretty good business need, and they're all doing it pretty well. I think Mark raised a good point, which is about the diversity. And I think about, trying to control a little bit of your own destiny. And our digital marketing team has done a very good job of creating avenues to develop our own marketing channels with our fan base so that we can communicate directly to them, perhaps taking some of those intermediaries out. And then also once it's within our own environment, obviously we have a little more control over that privacy. And I think we tend to take that pretty seriously. We're respectful of people's desire not to have every little bit of their online experience
yes,
exposed
sure.
to just any marketer. But I do think, you know, if you really are trying to, you know, future-proof yourself, the hope is that you can start creating, you know, marketing tactics that are helping you create that experience where maybe you're not relying on buying advertising, but maybe people will do some of that advertising for you. And you can, you know, bring them into your environment and into your communication channels.
Yes.
I mean, that's the goal of all of ours. We'd like to be so organic that our message is reaching without the need for a marketing spend and things like that. That's the dream of any business, is to have perpetual marketing without a spend. I mean, sign me up right now.
Totally.
But I think, you know, we're fortunate that we have some things that are just natural to our business. You know, we do, you can basically play any of our shows on our website. And it's organic for us. And you know, you get someone that's a fan of one show, and they'll come in, they'll start playing other shows, and then they're discovering other shows. So yeah, it's perhaps a little bit obvious, you know, to correct your own marketing channels. But I do think, you know, the more you can find those ways of creating an engagement that's perhaps outside of your content that allows you to create that marketing channel, maybe the better you'll be.
Thank you, Rio. And what about you, Rorier? What do you think?
Well, actually, we had a customer that was actually facing those privacy issues because of very strict European privacy laws. So they actually had to get rid of some of the algorithms that were targeting their audience with the pre-rolling they also had in place. So they had to ask their viewers, like, is it okay if we switch on those very personal, highly targeted commercials? And they discovered that almost 90% just switched it off. No, don't show me those personalized messages. So what they had to do is come up with a different strategy. And now they're not using those algorithms anymore. They actually are making more money. So they had, it's not targeted at you as you as a person. So it's not that pre-roll that's constantly just following you through YouTube and Facebook. And I've already bought those shoes, you know, but they just, have a platform where people just sign in. They can buy pre-rolls. I think it almost works like the linear television. You buy a slot, they place it, and it actually makes more money.
Okay.
I cannot share it now, but it was in the news in Europe that they actually achieved this. So.
Okay, we came to the end of the session. It was really interesting. Thank you very much for you guys to join today. It's really helpful. Hopefully next time we will meet personally.